far today, we have talked about what it means to be a missionary, what it means to be salt. And so now we need to look at the second portion of that passage in Matthew chapter 5. It says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So, similar to how we were talking about before, this passage says that we are light, and that through shining that light, people see that light, and instead of seeing us, they see God. But the part that I want to take away from this is that you are light. So far, we've established that you are a missionary, that you are salt, and that you are light. What does it mean for us to be light? In 1 John chapter 1, verses 5 through 7, it says this. It says, "This is the message we have heard from Him and proclaim to you, that God is light, and in Him is no darkness at all." It says that God is light, and in Him is no darkness. Now, before we continue on in this passage, let's establish something. Darkness and light don't really mix. In fact, light pushes away the darkness. You know, darkness can dominate a room until you turn on a light. And then when you turn on that light, imagine being in your bedroom and turning on a flashlight, and all of a sudden, the darkness is pushed away. It runs away to the corners. It runs away to the fringes, because light and darkness don't mix. And here in 1 John it says that God is light, and in Him is no darkness. Continuing on, it says, "If we say we have fellowship with Him while we walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as He is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, His Son, cleanses us from all sin." So, a couple things we need to establish before we move on. God is light. Light and darkness don't mix. Anyone who walks in darkness is not following God. Right, so we get all that. That's all pretty simple so far. But then look at John chapter 3. "And this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people love the darkness rather than the light, because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, unless his works be exposed." Let me read that again. "For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works be exposed." So not only are you light, but your job, part of your mission, part of our role as light, as salt, as missionaries, is to light up the darkness. You see, darkness covers sin. Light exposes it. And so what does it mean for us as Christians to be a light in this world? You know, we talked earlier about what it means to be salt, salt of the earth, and how as salt, we enhance, we really just help people bring attention to God. And that's kind of how light works too, except with light, light is more of like an offensive weapon, right? The purpose of light is to expose and to push away darkness. So as salt, we point people to God. But as light, we expose and point out and push away the darkness. So as one, we point people to God. As the other, we repel darkness. Now, here's what I think that means for us. We have kind of a weird thing going on. And again, I'm using a very blanket term here. But we tend to have a weird thing going on when it comes to sin. We will stand up and we will proudly say that something is wrong. We will acknowledge that things are wrong. But acknowledging that something is wrong or that something is sinful isn't the same as pushing away the darkness. It isn't the same as exposing it. You see, it is one thing for us to stand up in this building and to say, this is wrong. It is another thing to be a light in the world, exposing darkness for what it is. Think about all the things that go on in your school. Think about all the things, all of the darkness that you see, most of you see, every day. Do people know that you know it's wrong? In the same way, do people know who your master, like what master you serve? Do people know that you know that it's wrong? I think about this passage in Romans chapter 1. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them but give approval to those who practice them. So in this passage, right before this passage, Paul lists out a whole bunch of sins, basically all the things that are going on in Rome. And then he says this, he says, though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice all these things deserve to die. And by the way, all those sins he listed out, a little hard to read because some of them are big ones like, you know, murder and stuff that we all, you know, pretty much stay away from. But then there's like, he also includes gossips and liars and some things that maybe we wouldn't say people deserve to die over, right? But he says that those who practice such things deserve to die. They don't only do them, but they give approval to those who practice them. You see, darkness and light don't mix. And so if you are light, then darkness cannot be around you. It can't be around us without being exposed for what it is. And that means that we point it out and we call it what it is. Our society right now has gotten really good at masking sin as something else. When Tiffany and I were living in the Dominican Republic, we lived in a very small village of like 100 people, and those 100 people lived along like a 4-mile road. So we were just very, very small. But then we were close to a city of about 16,000, and in that country, that's a city, right? And so in that community, there was a major issue of husbands not being faithful to their wives and their families. Now, we have that issue in our country too, but in the Dominican, it was weird because, see, these husbands, they were fishermen, and they would be gone on the boat fishing for months at a time. And so what a lot of them, and actually most of them, would do is they would have a family at home, and then at their first port, they would have a family there, and a family at the next, and a family at the next. And that was just common practice. It was common knowledge in our community that the majority of husbands did that. It wasn't something that was ever talked about openly. No one would really acknowledge it, but everybody knew. And it got to the point that because it had been going on for so long, and because nobody actually talked about it or acknowledged it, then it just became common practice. And it was just expected, because you see, when you don't expose darkness, when you choose not to expose light, you end up becoming a part of it. You end up getting sucked into it too. And that sin enveloped that entire community and infected that entire community, because at the beginning, nobody chose to call it what it was. We are called to be people who expose darkness. So that means that if something is going on around us that is wrong, that is sinful, that is darkness, then we have a responsibility to shine the light on it. Now, that's not a whole lot of fun, I'll just be honest with you. It's not fun to be the one kid who stands up and goes, "Hey, that's not okay." It's not fun to be the one kid in the lunchroom who says, "Hey, like, we shouldn't be doing this to that kid. Like, that's not okay." But it's what we're called to do. And it's part of our mission that we talked about at the beginning. It's part of our mission that not only are we salt of the earth, not only are we pointing people to Christ, but we are pushing against the darkness. You know, Paul talks about spiritual warfare. Paul talks about how we are fighting this spiritual war, and yet oftentimes when I'm in the church, it doesn't feel like we're much of an army. It seems like we are good with the being here and worshiping part. We're great at the praying part. We're good at that stuff. But when it comes to actively fighting against darkness, I think we struggle with that. One of the reasons we probably struggle with that is because a lot of the darkness in the world, we're kind of comfortable with it at this point. And in fact, there's a lot of things in the world that we probably benefit from in a lot of ways. And so we don't expose it. We don't call it out. Now, I'll be honest, your generation is probably going to be better at this than mine is, or the one before mine. Because you already, as a generation, have shown that in a lot of ways you tend to be a lot less tolerant of things going on around you that you know are wrong. Now, the choice that you have is, do you just stand up and say, "Hey, that's wrong," or are you going to actively push against it? Because where there is light, there can't be darkness. They don't mix. In John chapter 1, it says this, and before I read this, we live in a dark world. We do. Satan is active. He is looking for ways to attack us. He is present in our society. He is present in your schools. It is so obvious. And it can be really discouraging. It can be really hard. Listen, I know that there are days that you just don't feel like there's anything you can do. There are days back home at Highlands, I work with our students at our church, but I also, we have a kind of an inner city ministry going on. And so we've got about 15 students that during the school year, I drive back and forth from the church to their home, and I spend a lot of time with them. And these boys have issues in their lives that none of my other students could even imagine, right? I've got a 15-year-old student right now who is homeless. And he's currently, I say he's homeless, he doesn't have a permanent home. He's currently paying rent to live at a friend's house, and he's working three jobs to pay that rent and trying to go to high school. None of my other kids know anything about that. I've got another student who has five brothers, or had five brothers, because all five have been shot in the last 2 years and killed. There are days working in that ministry where I hear the things that are going on in my students' lives, and I go, there's just no way. We can't win this. But the really cool thing is that we don't have to. In John 1, verses 4 through 5, it says, in him, he being Jesus, it says, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. It doesn't say it won't overcome it. Doesn't say it can't overcome it. It says it has not overcome it. And here's why that matters. Since the beginning of the world, light and darkness have been battling. And darkness hasn't won yet. And the reason why that's cool, I grew up being a UCF fan, kind of. My grandfather was a Florida fan. My youth minister was a UCF fan. So I liked both schools. When I was growing up, the University of Central Florida had a horrible, horrible football team. Just awful. And we knew before we went into a game what the outcome was going to be, right? We just knew. When I went to college, I went to Freed Hardeman, and when I was in college, the majority of my friends were Alabama fans, which is like the worst situation you could ever put yourself in, to be honest, but most of them were Alabama fans. And their viewpoint on football was very different than mine, because I just went to games to enjoy them because we were going to lose anyways, right? But they always walked into every game with an expectation that they were going to win because they had Alabama football behind them and what that meant. You see, light, Jesus, God, he's undefeated. That battle's been raging forever, and it's already been won, and it's won every day. We have to stop as a people putting the pressure on ourselves to do Jesus' job. Our job is to live out the mission that we've been given. Our job is to be salt in pointing people to Christ, and our job is to be light in exposing the darkness around us. But it is not our job to win the war, because Jesus has already done that. And when we recognize that, if you choose to embrace that, it is probably the best freedom you will ever experience. For me, as a youth minister, I can point you to the exact day when my entire career as a youth minister changed. And it was the day that I realized that I don't actually matter that much. Because up until that point, I was trying so hard to do everything and make everything happen. And there was just a day randomly where I realized that it really didn't matter that much how funny I was or how good of a speaker I was. What mattered is that I pointed kids to Christ. And that was it, because he does all the actual work. And as long as I continued to point students to Christ, Jesus would take care of the rest. And we need to make that decision in our lives too. You see, you are a missionary and you live on the mission. You are salt and you point people to Christ. You are light and you expose, actively expose the darkness. And God takes care of the rest. And if you will lift that burden off your shoulders, you will find that this whole idea of evangelism becomes a whole lot easier, because the pressure is off of you. I pray, and I know a lot of adults, pray for you guys every day. And I pray that you will continue to be empowered and grow and equipped to fulfill the mission that God has given you. I was talking earlier with one of the other adults here about all of the congregations in the state of Florida that we know are dying and that are struggling, and the ones that probably won't be here in a couple years. And I'll be honest, it's really easy for me as an adult to look at that and get really discouraged. But then I look at your generation. And listen, people can get annoyed with you guys. Y'all use some weird words. You say some weird things. You do some weird stuff. You like video games in a way that the generation before me will never, ever understand. Ever. Right? There was some kid, I'm not going to say some kid, I actually watched this happen, but there was a kid the other day, 16 years old, he wins $3 million playing Fortnite. Most adults will never understand how that's okay or cool or anything, but I sat there for 4 hours, I watched the thing happen, right? Your generation's kind of weird, but the cool thing about your generation is that you care and that you are pretty honest about the things going on in our world that's wrong. And you're passionate. I believe in you guys. I'm encouraged by you guys. More importantly, God believes in you guys. And I pray that you will be able to take some of this pressure off of yourself and trust in the God who has bestowed this mission upon you to go into the world and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them and teaching them to do the work of Christ. You can do that. I know you can do that. God knows you can do that. You have to decide that you can do that.